Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m. We come your way Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we are also archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we link to our guests' websites, so we encourage you to check out our guests. And I hope that you are doing well. I hope that you are participating. I'm hoping that you are participating by checking out these various websites because they've got some good stuff, I guarantee you. We don't reinvent the wheel. We just send you to the wheel, which is the website of our guests. Today is no exception, no exception whatsoever, because today we're going to be talking with a gal who has a very interesting website. We're going to find out about her, her website, the things that she's doing, the work that she's doing. Her name is Terry Wade, and it's TheEvolvingArtist.com, TheEvolvingArtist.com. Terry, thank you so much for joining us via Skype.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
And what's interesting is that this is basically how we became acquainted, and that is through this process of LinkedIn. And I do actually go through LinkedIn. I check in. I get invitations to connect. Hey, I'd like to join your network. I thought, I didn't know I had a network. And I don't even know how many people I have in my network. I do have to say that the one thing that I question is this endorsement aspect of LinkedIn. Because if I don't know you, you know what I'm saying? I don't know who you are. I don't know where you're from. And yet you're asking me to endorse you. And usually you endorse somebody who you know, you've had some experience with, whether it be in a working relationship or other. And vice versa. And so I send out this standard thing saying, hey, thanks, I appreciate it, but this doesn't mean anything because I don't know you, you don't know me. And yes, that's what LinkedIn is all about. But, you know, maybe that's the whole point is, all right, I'll tell you what, before I endorse you, let's connect here. Let's have a chat and let's see what you can do.
It's funny. I mean, I've never actually asked anyone to endorse me for anything on LinkedIn, but I have a ton of endorsements, and the vast majority of them are by people that I've never spoken to before. I think part of it is like with the hope that then I'll go on their site and endorse them for a bunch of stuff that I don't know that they can do as well. So yeah, it is very interesting.
It's to me, it's the equivalent of likes on Facebook. Now I don't have a Facebook account anymore. I just don't. I mean, it's never come up because I have a website. You have a website, and I'm thinking, why would I want to, using my analogy of earlier, reinvent the wheel? I just send people to my website. That's where the important stuff is. Well, and I've used Twitter, and I do have an account. I still have a Twitter account that I will occasionally, for example, the week that this program airs, I'm sure that you will probably
I'll tweet it out.
You'll tweet it out saying, hey, tune in, go to here. Here's the website. And there's a listen live link that you can click on. The archives are on the radio show's page. Check it out. You know, I'd love to get, you know. And so, yeah, I would use Twitter, but Facebook, I'm still confused, Mr. Zuckerberg. I still don't understand. But hey, well, you know, if it works for you, more power to you.
And LinkedIn, I'm not really very active on LinkedIn, but I will say that I have made a handful of really awesome connections on there. You know, a couple of my podcasts are session recordings that I did with an actor that a lot of people tell me are really helpful for them, and I met him on LinkedIn. And another producer I met on LinkedIn and became close with. So it's a handful. It's about five, even though there's, you know, hundreds of connections on there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, like I said, every once in a while I'll get this request to join and sign up for the premium. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I appreciate the offer, but I'm happy with the way things are as is. It's like with a lot of other applications, whether it be on my phone or on my computer that I use, I'm using the free version because it serves the purposes for which I need. And that's all I need. I don't need anything more. I don't need a lot of extras. And, you know, but again, I know there are people that do. And again, more power to them if it works for them. I want to find out, too, in terms of this aspect of the evolving artist. I mean, you've mentioned five. You talk about right now you have five people you're working with in particular. Mm-hmm. But I would like to find out a little bit about you in terms of your background and how you, what is the work that you are doing? How did you get started in this? Because to work with artists, what are the parameters as far as artist? What does that mean?
Well, for years I didn't focus on working with artists. You know, when I started doing the kind of work that I do, it was because I was feeling extremely depressed, and I tried regular therapy and it didn't work for me. Actually ended up leaving in tears. And then I discovered this one kind of alternative therapy that made me feel so much different so quickly, and no one I knew had ever heard of it. And I started studying and learning from all sorts of different teachers. and that was 17 years ago. And I've created my own methods over those past 17 years. And it was in 2009, because I used to work with all different kinds of people. And I started hearing marketing consultants that I would work with because I wanted to bring my work forward more. Because a lot of people haven't heard of so many kinds of methods out there that are super effective. And I wanted to be someone who helped bring those forward to a wider audience. And I started working with an actor out in LA by phone. I do all my work by phone. And he was the best friend of one of my best friends. And, you know, he kept talking about certain problems, and she was telling him, you should talk to Terry, you should talk to Terry. And when I worked with him, I'd never really worked with an actor before. And there were so many aspects of working with him that really just made me fall in love with working with artists. And one of the reasons is that they usually have big dreams. A lot of people are telling them that it's impossible to achieve them. They face rejection and criticism on a daily basis. And yet they're somehow expected to just be able to handle all of that and be fine, when yet they're also very sensitive, artists are. And so that unique combination, and I just also love seeing the greatest change in people. Like, the more change that I help someone experience in their life, the better I feel. I get uplifted as they get uplifted. The other reason I also wanted to work with artists was because I want to, you know, just like most people, I want to make as big of a difference as I can. And I think artists are in a position, a more powerful position in my opinion, than just about anyone to make a difference in the world. And deep down, all the artists that I work with, even if they don't know it or aren't conscious of it at first, because they're maybe having a lot of anxiety issues or they just want to book a role on this TV show, when we really, really dive down, they want to help people. They want to make a difference. They want to share stories that make a difference and change the way people see the world and how they behave in the world. And so that's ultimately, you know, the main reason I work with artists, because when I help artists to change their lives, it can't not flow over into the work that they share with the world.
Now, are we talking about painters, sculptors, musicians, actors?
I don't discriminate from between different kinds of artists. I say the word artist because in the industry, that's also how most actors, writers, directors, producers, like, they tend to refer to themselves as artists, because they are. So most of my clients are actors, writers, directors, but I also work with, I have quite a few who are musicians. I have some who are writers and authors. I have some who are entrepreneurs, because in this day and age, entrepreneurs are actually required to be artists. They're supposed to be writing books and blogs and performing on stage, giving speeches. So, you know, sometimes I get emails from people saying, hey, would you be willing to help me? Because I don't know if I would qualify myself as an artist, but when somebody feels a pull towards my work, you know, I don't say no, you know, you're not an artist, I won't work with you. Because every single time, even this one girl who started working with me when she was working at Dunkin' Donuts and didn't even know what she wanted to do with her life, like, it comes out later that, oh, she wants to be a lyricist and has since she was a child. Like, there's always this point in time where it comes forward. Like, what I really want to do is write a screenplay. But maybe they haven't even acknowledged that or felt like it was safe, you know, to acknowledge it. Because there's so many dream crushers out there, unfortunately. Sometimes they're our parents. Sometimes they're the culture, our friends.
Yeah, that's true. And it's hard sometimes to separate ourselves from, we'll use that phrase, dream crushers, because we are in relationship with them. They could be our significant other, our spouse, brother, sister, mother, father, co-workers, boss, you know, and they're just constantly these types of people. Is another word that often is used is an energy vampire.
Yeah,
that's another way to put it too. And it's not even that they mean well, because they don't even know what they're doing in many instances.
That's the thing. Is you know, I don't typically refer to them as dream crushers. I mean, you know, trolls on the internet, maybe I'll refer to as like dream crushers. There's a lot of them out there, but the most challenging part is when people who love us and are super well-intentioned and we have good aspects of our relationship with them and not so good, when they say these things to us, people that we trust, that we love, tell us like, I don't know, that's going to be really hard to do. You know, that has an even bigger impact. And you're right. Most of the time when people are doing that, or a lot of the time, it's coming from a place of good intention and love, you know. And there are, like you said, energy vampires on the other side of the spectrum who often don't even know they're doing it, who are literally bringing people down. And I think if we could see the energy transference, they're taking some of that person's energy away.
Yeah. Whereas what you're trying to do is you're trying to give them energy, not yours, but shall we say the universal energy, if you will. That creative energy that is not withdrawn from the individual, yourself, but you're sharing the same energy that you are using in your creative endeavors with them to help them to, again, I love this. Our mission is to empower you with personal transformational methods that amplify and direct your true creative power so you can live the life you're meant to live and have the impact you're here to make.
Yeah.
Now, I want to address this statement that I just read.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, your mission is to... And so you lay out what your mission is. And so you have created this wonderful website and the work that you do for the last, 11 or is it 16 years?
It's starting to be 17 now. Yeah.
So you have theevolvingartist.com. That's the website. And you, as you say, you do most of your work over the phone. And, of course, the beautiful thing with that is the now phone calls virtually throughout the country are free if you have a smartphone, you know, that kind of thing. So that's fantastic.
And my clients travel a lot, too, so that enables us to continue the work, you know, no matter where they are.
And, of course, we're all trying to find our purpose. We've talked about that more times than I like to than I can count on this program over the last 8-plus years. And at the same time, you know, it's like, okay, we have free will to self-determine our direction, our path, and the things that we want to do. At the same time... the way this is phrased, so you can live the life you were meant to live and have the impact you're here to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, even in those two phrases, there's, you were meant to live. Okay. Well, how do I know how I was meant to live? And how do I know what impact I'm supposed to have, or do I just jump in the river and just literally just go with the flow and not worry about making decisions?
I don't recommend that. So here's what I experience in working with people. You know, I never presume to know what somebody needs. I never presume to know what somebody is meant to do. I don't walk in as a guru and say, you should do this or you should do that, because it doesn't really work anyway. I feel like in my work, I've come to see that deep down, everybody does know what they feel like they are here to do. And that can manifest in any number of ways, but deep down, people know what they're meant to do, but there are so many reasons why they might shrink from that, hide from that, keep it unconscious, keep themselves numbed out, because there are so many scary things that can come with doing what you feel like you're meant to do. But that feeling, you know when you have that feeling, when you're doing something and you're like, oh my God, like this is what I was meant to do. And, you know, there are so many artists that I work with who just know that. You know, people ask them, you know, why are you an actor? And they're like, because I can't imagine doing anything else. Like they feel that sense of knowing. Now, a lot of people aren't sure about that and they're confused. And what's happening in that instance is there are different aspects of them inside. So we all have many, many different aspects of ourselves inside, and they're often in conflict with one another. Sometimes they're unaware of one another. Sometimes they're confused. Sometimes they're, you know, just openly hostile. So when people talk about, you know, that song by Eminem, Monsters in Your Head, I'm Friends With Them and stuff like that, it is so common for people to tell me, like, I hear, you know, I think one thing and some voice in my head says, no, you can't do that, or who do you think you are, or all that kind of stuff. But yet that other quieter voice is like, well, but no, let's go produce this play. But no, I can't. And so there's this inner conflict. And from what I've seen, when people aren't connected to their purpose, there are underlying unconscious reasons for that. And it's not until we're able to go in gently without trying to kill any part of you, overpower it, manipulate it, or anything like that, and create understanding between these different parts and give different parts what they need. What happens every time is they organically start to work together inside, and they're on the same page. They know what they want to do. Everyone feels included. That's when you stop having the voices in your head, and that's when you start getting onto that path and feeling at peace with it, and empowered to follow through with what you feel like you're here to do without any questioning of yourself.
Yeah, that's a big deal. It really is. I know that all I can say is I have been fortunate to have found at least, and here's a good question for you. I have actually found my life's purpose for now.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk about a change. Let's talk about it changing.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah. I mean, I am, you know, I do call my company The Evolving Artist, because I also try to, you know, make sure people know that, you know, whenever I work with someone or whenever they use one of my online programs, one of my methods, it's not designed to take you to a final point of destination, because, and I haven't arrived at some final point of destination. I love growing and I love evolving and I love changing. The problem is when people get stifled in their growth, you know, that's what I like to help people move out of, and to open those channels so they don't have resistance to growing. So at any point in time, you can have revelations about what would be best to do next. And they happen naturally, I think, when you're on the course that's meant for you right now. So like right now, I love this, you know, you are living your purpose right now. And because you're living your purpose, I feel like you would be open to another opportunity presenting itself to you that feels like it's even more right for you next, because you're already in that vibe, because you're already living your purpose on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, and there's so many different ways to manifest a particular purpose. Like me, I like to help create change in the world. right? So one of the ways, you know, the primary way I've done it for the last 17 years is working with people one-on-one. But I'm in a transitionary phase right now where I am starting to work with larger numbers of people. And but it's the same mission. It's the same purpose, helping to create change. Mm-hmm. I can do that through writing my book. I can do it through writing a screenplay. I can do it through starting a podcast. It's a insidious form of self-sabotage, though, to put too many different things on your plate at one time. That's a really common trap artists fall into. So
when we come back from our break, I want to discuss this aspect of your book. Now, I haven't found the link yet on your website to it, so we're going to bring that into the forefront. But then I also want to talk to you about the fact that we all have a book inside us, and I've had one inside of me for 15 years. It's the same book, and it actually I have it. I have a print version, but I also have an electronic version. But they're not finished. I'm still working on it. We'll talk about that as we continue. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Terry Wade. She has TheEvolvingArtist.com. That's the website. What we're talking about is your evolution. I would venture, Terry, that we are all artists,
yes,
of one kind or another, even if we don't recognize it. For example, I mean, my wife is very talented artistically when you think of the word art. Matter of fact, when we went to sell our home in Phoenix and moved to Santa Barbara, you know, you have to set it up to show. And we had different realtors coming in with people, and they would comment to us privately, "Wow, your house! Who designed your show place here? How she did, you know?" And of course, also designing sacred spaces, maybe a little corner in a room for your meditation or prayer, what have you. In the backyard, we had a greenhouse, and we created this beautiful little patio area with a table and chairs and an umbrella and pavers on the ground and so on and so on and so on, with a little picket fence around it. I mean, it's remarkable what she's able to do, as well as she's into photography now. And I shouldn't say now, she's sort of re-entering it again. So those are aspects. But you could conceivably be an artist, mm-hmm, in a perspective job, for example,
anyone,
the medical field.
Yeah,
the medical field.
And those are healing artists.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about you and your upbringing that has brought you here, because a lot of times when we take a look back at our guest pasts, you know, at first blush, it's like, boy, and how did you get here?
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mesh, but in fact, makes perfect sense. So from where do you hail, not only physically and so forth, but also even from the standpoint of your spiritual growth?
Well, I was born in Kansas, and I was a military brat, so we moved around a lot, and that required me learning how to be an actress in some ways, honestly, because when I moved from Alabama and had a thick Southern accent to New York, I had to drop that accent really quickly, or I was going to get beat up. So I think
so. It wasn't natural.
It wasn't natural. Okay. No. The moving around thing, I think that it fostered a sense of wanting to continue to move, which is a big form of change. And then also just paying attention to the people around me and how I can blend in and sort of match up with them. Now my dad was a Vietnam veteran, and he was pretty tough on us. So we grew up in a very militant household. He had PTSD. He was an alcoholic. We had a lot of psychological and physical abuse in my family. And I internalized I had to shut down from my feelings a lot. And I think I left my body a lot to just as a way to cope. and I had really low self-confidence. I was the girl who, when she got called on in school, would just like turn beet red. And when I always kept my hair long so I could hide in front of it or behind it. But then I moved to California, you know, because I felt like inside, you know, I heard from my dad really mixed messages, but, you know, he did tell me frequently that I was a loser, that I was never going to do anything with my life. And when he would say that, I would just feel inside like, you're wrong. Part of me would. So this is where the different aspects come in. I'm well-versed with like the warfare inside of your head, because I feel like I was raised in an environment that was very warlike, because you never knew when he was going to explode. It was kind of like walking through a minefield. So I had a lot of that kind of warfare inside, parts of me being like, no, he's wrong. You're going to do something important and help people one day, make a difference. And then the like, you can't do that. People like you who have this kind of upbringing, they don't get to be like that. So I had all that going on. And I wanted to prove him wrong. And one of the ways I thought I could do that was go to a really good college, because he said I would never do that either. And so I ended up getting into UC Berkeley. And I wanted to study whatever I loved most. I wanted to be like a lawyer or doctor, because I thought those were, you know, successful careers where I would have power, make money, again, prove my dad wrong. And I knew you could go to law school with any major, so I decided to focus on what I loved most, and it was history, which I hated in high school. So boring. But in college, I had these professors who were so animated on stage, and they told stories is what they were doing. They were telling stories about the past. They knew that history wasn't set in stone, like my high school history teacher, who spoke in a very monotonous tone, used to make us feel. You know, they would tell these theories that they believed in, but then they'd talk about how, but these other people think this, and these other people think this, and I want to know what you think. And to me, it was just mind-blowing that history could be so fluid and undecided. And so I loved history, ended up not going to law school. I went to Ecuador for a while and lived with an indigenous tribe teaching English, and then becoming a rainforest guide for a little while before I had a knee injury that made me leave and have to come back to the States. Now, during all that time in college, I was feeling really depressed when I was at Berkeley. You know, I was like, oh, great, I'm doing this thing. You know, I'm at Berkeley. And yet I felt even more depressed than ever. So I realized it didn't matter what I did on the outside, that how I felt about myself was still going to be the same because of the family, history that I had. So that's when I went to a therapist, felt worse, and then found this alternative therapist. And yeah, she was amazing.
Been there.
Yeah. Most of my clients have too. I have a lot of people come to me after like 10 years of psychotherapy, and they're like, this doesn't work. Not that, and there are some awesome therapists out there, but sure. I didn't see one when I went to my first appointment with one.
That kind of takes us back too, also to the aspect of the conversation in regards to living one's life purpose and making choices, which is what we talk about here. We provide choices and knowledge of those choices to help make people's dreams come true. And yet at the same time, if you were to look back, you'd say, well, you know what? That horrible therapist actually helped me, even though directly and in the moment or the moment after, I was like, you're an idiot and I'm out of here. Yes. By the way, I'm not paying the bill. but then you start to look back and you go, you know what? Here's what I learned from that therapist. As bad as I perceived that therapist to be at the time, here's what I learned from them. I would never go back to them, wouldn't recommend them, but.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of the changes we're starting to make in our perceptions in this world, is that as bad as our past was, it's our past. We cannot pull that thread out or everything unravels. I mean, if it was possible to take that thread out.
I agree. I mean, that's actually central to the Essential Life Story Method that I've created that is all about learning how to retell your past in a way that changes your present and your future, which I drew on my history degree from UC Berkeley to create this alternative method, because it's something that's not really well known, that you that history can be interpreted in many different ways. You know, we say, no, you can't rewrite history, but it's like historians know that that's what they have to do. They're rewriting history all the time in truthful and honest ways, hopefully ways that are even more honest than other accounts. And we can do that with our own histories as well. Retell them in ways that are even more honest than the versions that we're often unconsciously telling ourselves inside of our heads that aren't in our favor.
Interesting that you have this proclivity for doing what you're doing. So let me ask you, do you have a degree in therapy and psychology?
I don't, and I'm really thankful that I don't.
As a matter of fact, I asked that question, obviously, because I was able to, we chatted before and read your bio as well. And it's one of those, I can hear the conversation with the parents now.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get a degree in pottery, or even for that matter, history, or some obscure thing that really, if you look at it going, and if I follow that in to its logical conclusion, there's no money there. I'm lucky to find a job, you know, but I kind of feel the same way in that, though I consider this radio program to be my form of therapy. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I find that the conversations that I have with people, and maybe I'm getting some of this via osmosis. I don't know.
I'm sure.
from you and our other guests, that I then can kind of take out into the real world, and not to try to go out and consciously fix anybody, but to begin the process of, you know, relating from a different perspective. And some people look at me going, yeah, okay, I think you need a therapist. But I think that that's, if we were really able to take a look at our stuff in that regard. Yeah. I mean, I look back at the bullying in school that I was I want to say involved in, but I wasn't the bully. I wasn't the protagonist, as it were. But one of the things that I learned to do and did well at in elementary school, I didn't pursue it in high school, and that is I got involved with track and field because I decided that I wasn't going to stand there and take it. So I learned to run. And I did really well in track and field, you know, and so forth. But it's like, okay, the running, that may be okay for a little kid. Now you're an adult.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with that?
What do you do with that? Because you still run into, I had a general manager back in Phoenix who, when he hired me, it was as if I was his best friend ever. Mm-hmm. Within 2 weeks, he was treating me as if I had just killed his best friend. And I hadn't done anything other than my job. Mm-hmm. I certainly found out the reasons why all of this unfolded. But I stood my ground in the sense that I wasn't going to quit and give him the satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to run. By the same token, I was going to have to put up with, you know, the angst and all of that stuff that was going on until such time as they then decided to, quote unquote, lay me off. Mm-hmm. And I knew they knew that they had done wrong because they gave me a rather sizable severance package. And in my business, you don't get that.
That's rare, yeah.
So I think that what you're talking about is what is it? You're not rewriting the past, but you're repatterning your perception and or
And basically the story of your life.
The story, okay.
You know, because we all, you know, a lot of times when people hear me talk about the story of their life, their knee-jerk response is, oh, well, I don't have a story. That sounds hard to write one. And first of all, I'm talking about a 5-page version of your story. Mm-hmm. The Essential Life Story Program is about writing a short story because you can get a more bird's eye view when it's a short story. Mm-hmm. But what happens is you know, people are in denial of having this story, but we all are carrying one inside. It's just sort of like an iceberg where only the tip is visible. We can hear ourselves telling ourselves stories sometimes, right? But most of the story, even if you've done all the latest self-help techniques and all that stuff, I mean, I'd studied hundreds of different kinds of alternative therapies. And when I first began working with my story, I was shocked by what came out. And my clients tell me that all the time. And they're, you know, ones who do a lot of work on themselves. It's an unconscious story that we're carrying around with us. And so what we're able to do step by step is, you know, it's not so much about, oh, let's look at this one bad thing that happened and find the positive take on it, because a lot of people have a lot of resistance to doing that. They're like, I don't want to find the upside of being raped, you know, mm-hmm. and it's hard to be like, oh, just do it, you know, and I never do that. But each event, what's so cool about it, about working with your story, is that each event is not in isolation. Each event is tied to other ones, like many different beads on a necklace. And so you have to look at the whole story, even if it's a short one. It starts from birth and ends at where you're at now and then foreshadows into the future. But you have to look at the whole to really find the connections between, you know, why you might have been resonating with finding a job where this boss was an ass. You know, it's usually not in isolation. It's connected to other events. And when you find these threads and you follow the method, basically it's a very, very well-defined step-by-step method for, you know, including a template, a cut and paste template that creates a new story for yourself that is just as accurate and honest and truthful as the first version. But it actually feels even more true, because most of our stories are coming from more of a victimized place, even if we don't think they are at first, even if we think we've worked through all of our stuff. And, you know, it's not true that we're all victims in our core. So as you move the story further and further along the spectrum towards a place of deeper empowerment, not surface level whitewashing, let's make everything roses and bury all the bad stuff. You can't do that because it won't even work in terms of changing your life. But following the method, keeping everything balanced, moving it to a higher vibration, it becomes a more empowered story. And in my opinion and experience, that's a more honest story, because deep down we have so much more power than we can even imagine, you know.
Speaking of power, we put that power into a lot of things, and you have put your power into not only the evolving artist, but also into a book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, first of all, let's talk a little bit about this book, what it's about, but how long did it take you to write?
Well, it's going to my editor in 2 weeks, so it's not published just yet.
Okay.
And I've been working on it for 6 years now, and it's the same title as
the Evolving Artist
program. Mm-hmm. No, not the Evolving Artist, the Essential Life Story.
Oh, I beg your pardon. The Essential Life Story. Okay.
So the Evolving Artist is sort of this, like, it's the umbrella. And underneath of the Evolving Artist, what I offer are methods of personal transformation. And the Essential Life Story is one of those methods. And my book is about this. It's a 12-step process for transforming, redefining the story of your life.
Borrowing the pattern from the 12-step programs that are out there?
No, it's definitely not that. I mean, I've actually been a sober person for almost 12 years now, and I've been to some 12-step meetings early on, and I think that I know plenty of people whose lives they have saved. But no, it has nothing to do with other 12-step programs. It just happens to be that the method is best arranged. And I've tried I've spent thousands of hours developing this method. It's been three steps. It's been six. It's been all over the place. And then I started testing it, field testing it with clients and fine tuning it and developing it further and then recreating it over and over again until I'm, you know, it's pretty dialed in and it's happens to be 12 steps.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some more about this aspect of this power. I mean, you and I both are understanding where this is coming from, but a lot of folks, you know, that's not their orientation. Their particular belief systems just don't take them that way, at least not to the degree that you and I would. I'm a pretty open individual when it comes to the energies of the universe and just going with the flow. As I've shared before, I consider myself to have been throughout my life in the right place at the right time. And I'm very fortunate in that regard. I'm very happy that it's worked out that way. But not everybody can claim that. They have a hard time with this aspect going with
tapping
the flow
in.
Yeah, tapping in and then going
their
with
personal
the flow
power.
Because they really want to control the whole situation, and that's understandable, you know, because we want some kind of structure to our lives. We want things to work, we want things to make sense, but it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a lot of confusion between like how much power or control is appropriate in creating my life. When you were talking earlier about how anybody could be an artist, I can't agree more. You know, I think that we are all artists, and our greatest work of art is the life that we're creating every day. I mean, every one of us is using our creative energy to create our own lives via the thoughts we're thinking, how we're feeling, and the decisions that we're making. And I think that there's a lot of confusion between like, okay, how much is okay for me to want to control, and how much am I supposed to just leave up to God, the universe, or source? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that my book addresses head on, because the method works best for people, and the program, you know, because it's called the Essential Life Story Program, and people actually are going through it already before the book comes out. It's on my website. But it addresses that balance. You know, I personally don't feel like we are here to just be vegetables and just let whatever happens to us happen to us. I mean, we have powers of creativity. And I think personally, I feel like whatever, you know, our creator, the source, the universe wants us to use that. Like, why would it give us these powers of creativity if we weren't here to use them? That said, I think it's a partnership, a dance between clarifying. I think our biggest goal is to try to clarify what it is that we want to be doing, what feels best for us to be doing, even if that sometimes needs to happen through an exploration. It's not like we have to always be crystal clear, but our goal becomes clarity. And then it also becomes relaxing with the flow that, hey, the universe is here to help me and wants to help me. And where people get really tripped up on that is when, like I did, they came from a very abusive household, because it's very easy to get stuck in the pattern of being like, oh wait, the universe wasn't helping me. Where was the universe there? Now I can look back and be like, oh yeah, it was, because you know what? This work that I do that gives me the chills every time I get to help somebody, I would not be doing this if I hadn't been living through hell for so long and worked so hard to get out of it. You know, so now I can see how that was actually in my favor. But you can't just snap your fingers and do that either. A lot of people end up feeling broken if people say, just look on the bright side, and they can't. It's a process to getting there.
Yeah. It's like, you look on the bright side.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah.
What are you talking about?
And you don't know what I've been through. You know, that's a really common, like, and that just makes people kind of like even more resistant to moving to a better feeling place where their lives can really actually truly change. And those patterns can be different because, you know, it is all about, you know, recreating patterns. We're born into patterns. We get accustomed to them and cultured to them, but every pattern is changeable. you know, no matter what it is.
Well, I think that what you're offering people through this kind of work, I think it's extraordinary, because there are folks that, like I said, they're struggling. They're trying to figure all this stuff out. They're trying to make sense of the world that they live in, or that they're in. They may not feel like they're living much because of the frustrations. And we could sit here and list all of the things that I mean, I think of a line from a song that basically goes, for the first time in my life, I feel like a prisoner to the powers that be. I know that a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm communicating with one of my guests on a regular basis who is very focused on manifesting, for example. And I was sharing with him a situation the other day, and I said that I have two perspectives on this particular situation. One is, this is just part of the process that I need to just observe and not try to be a part of. Just let it unfold. But he also said that this is also possibly, because he doesn't have all the answers either, there's no nameplate on this issue or situation that says, this is part of the process, or you created this, deal with it, kind of thing. Right.
Oh, God, I hate that. Yeah.
And that's really what he was saying, yeah, that it is possible that you created this. Now, you could have created it from some previous messages that, for whatever reason, are coming forward and interfering with what you're trying to do as far as manifesting. Or you're right, it could be that this is the universe's way of manifesting what you're asking for.
And that's the key. You know, I heard someone talk about the idea of surrender once, because surrender can be so infuriating. The idea, like, surrender to
what?
Oh,
yeah.
You know, but
you surrender.
I heard this really great explanation of it once. I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about how, you know, it's nice to think of surrender, not surrendering to some outside force, but surrendering to the manifestation itself of what you have been calling forth, because it doesn't always come in the way that we expect it to or think that it will. But yeah, manifestation, I mean, that's the key objective in the story writing process, is to help you create the story that allows you to manifest whatever it is that you want. And so the book talks a lot about how there's this fine line, there's this dance between changing your mindset and your feelings through story and then welcoming in what you want. Now, I've seen it happen, you know, when you create when you find the blocks, you know, when you have a method that helps you to really actually truly find those blocks quickly and resolve them, the manifestation stuff happens super fast. And then some of it, certain, you know, you at least get signs that you're really on the right path if it's a greater manifestation. For example, my book, I mean, I wrote into my story a long time ago, years ago, that I wanted to publish this book. It hasn't been published yet. So one could say, like, it didn't work. But the thing is, I knew a lot of steps needed to happen before I could publish this book. One was, I needed to have a lot of other people go through it, and I needed to have a way to do that before writing it. So I created an online program, and, like, it's all been in process. And I think as long as you see tangible movement on a day-to-day basis and the signs that it's coming, then you're right on track, because sometimes there is a time delay. But it's when people aren't experiencing that clarity or that movement or those signs that there's usually some kind of block happening, some resistance inside. And I've had so many come up in this past 6 years where I've been working on this book. And luckily, I've got these tools to move through them. Because each time you move closer to something that you want, you know, more of those fears or roadblocks will come up, especially, again, when you've had a really troubled or challenging past. But even for people who, you know, don't have a lot of trauma in their history, anything can come up to block you.
Yeah, you when you talk, you use the analogy of the dance, and it made me think of that song by Garth Brooks, "The Dance."
I don't think I knew that one.
And basically, it's encouraging people to get, in essence, you know, yes, it's more of a song in terms of missing someone. Looking back on the memory of the dance we shared beneath the stars above, and it's sort of a love song too, but it also talks about getting back into the dance, you know, and or being glad that you were. Well, on our final day here, will we be able to look back and say, yeah, I did. I danced and I had a great time. There's a poem, I'll sort of paraphrase it. Having to do with sort of a baseball analogy, or it's a sort of a race of sorts, or a run, and it's not a race to be won in terms of finishing it as fast as you can. It's one to be enjoyed, and of course, when you come sliding in to home plate, for example, the baseball analogy, in one hand you have just this mess of stuff. And the other hand, you have this glass of champagne and you can say, hey, I ran my race. Harry Chapin, also an artist, a favorite artist of mine. He also has a little talk portion that he talks about one of his relatives who, I don't know if it was his uncle or his grandfather, or maybe it was his dad, but I talked about how, you know, Harry, you know, some days you go home and you have a good tired and a bad tired. And on those days when it's a bad tired, you know, you went out and you fought someone else's battles and you won someone else's conflicts and wars and so forth. And you go home and you can't rest easy and you toss and you turn. And it's when you go home after a real hard day's work and you fought your battles and you won your wars and you did your thing and you can lay down your head on that pillow and say, that was a good day. And it's a good tired. And Harry, I can say I'm feeling a good tired. And I think that's one of the things that we need to try to look at maybe. And that is, maybe we can talk about this a little bit in terms of taking on our, and I don't want to use the word stuff per se, but fighting our battles, doing our thing and not doing it for someone else. Even if you work for someone else, even if you're employed by someone else and you're doing a job that's benefiting them more, say, than maybe you. Changing the perspective on that. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
Or even in a relationship.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens in relationship to other people when we just change ourselves. And we hear that all the time. But that's actually one of the, you know, one of the chapters in the book or modules in the online course is called the Feel Better Letters. And I've just heard from so many people who do this technique that is done with a particular relationship that it completely shifts how that other person treats them in response. But it doesn't have to do with working with the other person. So, for example, let's say you were working with this boss and he was being a real jerk, you know. You could try to say to yourself, okay, let's just stay calm and not take it personally, or let's try to forgive him. You know, that's a big one. Just forgive him, be calm, all that kind of stuff. But you can find yourself having to continually try to convince yourself of that. But when you do this feel better letter technique, what it does is it gives you a way to write a letter that you never send to the other person that gets all your feelings out. And that's a common technique out there. Getting all your feelings out. It makes you feel better for a little bit. Even Abraham Lincoln used to do that, actually. But then using this method, you actually create a letter from the other person in response that tells you all the kinds of things that you'd need to hear to naturally just generate compassion and forgiveness. That's not the objective. The objective is to make you feel better in this relationship where you're feeling taken advantage of, mistreated, hurt, whatever those feelings you're having are. It makes you feel better, but the natural conclusion is it's easier to forgive people or not be bothered by them. And then interestingly enough, the other people usually end up treating you really differently in some examples. I mean, I've had people tell me they did them with their mom and she called them a couple days later and said things that like she'd never said in their life that were very much like what was in the letter. And I think it's just a good example of how much our relationships are a reflection of what we're what's happening inside. I think it's to such a greater degree than we even can understand, and that one person has the power to shift those dynamics, whether it's with an ex they can't let go of, a boss they're having to deal with every day, a parent who's passed away, a parent who's troublesome and in their life right now. Whoever it is, you know, what we're experiencing in relationships is such a reflection of what's happening. Now we hear that all the time, but it's another thing to get to see how quickly it can change when you have that right tool to create that kind of transformation inside.
Yeah. You know, and I listened to you talking, and of course made the comment earlier about your degree in psychology that you don't have.
Yes. Well, I tried to go to a psych class and something inside of me just was like, get out of here. Like run. I couldn't even sit in it for 10 minutes. And it was because someone drew the brain on the blackboard and started dissecting it. And they were like, here is where we feel emotions. And here is, and it just felt way too segmented. And so I ran. And what's really interesting is that, you know, I have a lot of friends who are coaches, other alternative therapy practitioners. And what and I've had a lot of friends also who are in the psychotherapy and therapist world. And there is this one primary difference between the two. In general, therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists are trained to look for pathologies in people. They're trained to look for problems that they can treat. But it's not coming from a place, by and large, there are some exceptions, but by and large, it's not with the understanding that whatever symptoms or like whatever pathology they're finding can ultimately transform or heal itself. And the alternative therapists that are becoming more and more popular, whatever their different methods are, there's millions of them out there. They, by and large, come from a place of feeling like their clients truly inside are whole and have the capacity to come to full health and well-being if they are given inroads to their own power. And it's about really empowering people to help and transform themselves. And that's what my tools are designed to do. And I don't think that I would have developed them or maybe even been able to develop them if I had been so trained. Because I think it's just so kind of like you become indoctrinated with this belief in the therapeutic world that people have pathologies and problems that they'll never go away. You know, and my experience has shown me that that's just, it doesn't have to be that way. And it's because of the perspective from which I'm coming that I'm able to help people in that way. So, yeah, I don't think a psychology degree would have helped me. And I think it would have hurt me, actually. I know people who have them and want to treat their clients in different ways than they were taught because their intuition tells them that that would be better. And they run into all these internal conflicts about it.
Now, there's an interesting key right there. And again, we converse about these particular things on a regular basis here on the program. Intuition. That's also another sort of controversial aspect to the, I guess you'd call it, human psyche. And that is, this was sort of brought up to me when I made the statement if you listen to that still small voice inside, it will never harm you. It might take you through some challenging times, Mm-hmm. Okay. But it is never going to put you, to coin the vernacular, it'll never put you in harm's way. Mm-hmm. Then someone said to me, this is where this comment was, well, how can you be sure that voice that you're listening to is thus and such? And mm-hmm. so maybe we'll start from that point. How can I be sure that mm-hmm. what I'm listening to in my meditation or in my quiet moment or as I'm walking across the street mm-hmm. of heavy traffic, that this is the genuine article, or because again, you've heard the stories of people say, well, yeah, I had these voices in my head that told me to do this thing.
Yeah.
And now they're sitting in a psych ward for the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. Having committed these horrible atrocities, or even using that plea of insanity, if you will, as a defense for mm-hmm. not taking responsibility because that wasn't really them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, to me, I feel like intuition is a like a channel that leads directly to my own highest self and or universal source energy, that's what that is, and that there are many, many also different aspects of myself inside that might be speaking to me at any number of times, and they can be connected to intuition, source energy, to varying degrees themselves. And I think that when somebody has a lot of stuff going on in their head, that's one of the biggest challenges, is they'll be jumping around in their head. They'll be like, you know, I mean, I want to make more money, but you know, but really it's fine, you know, but you know, it would be nice to, and you can hear them bouncing around from one aspect to the next. And in those cases, it's probably not intuition in and of itself. It's probably these different aspects. And what I use, in one of my methods with the mindset repatterning, I use applied kinesiology to muscle check specifically, okay, which aspect do we need to talk to first and communicate with and get information from? And then when do we need to shift gears to talk to another one or maybe some third that's popping in? And then, and how do they feel about each other? And start to just kind of unravel these conflicts inside. But I think that's a great question. I think that the more people are able to, instead of just like rebounding and being like, I don't know what's going on, I don't even want to go in here, or they go in and they start like embodying one and then fighting with the other and then switching and embodying the other, with like that's not going to usually lead them to their intuition, but the resolving those different issues between different aspects will help. And then when you do that, that's when intuition can come to you most clearly. It's like there's this book called The Moon Appears When the Water Is Still, and it's about different stories that have to do with meditation. And it's when those voices get still more that the – because like you said, it's this quiet voice a lot of the time, you know, the intuition and that knowingness. And it's really easy to overpower. You know, it's easy to just convince yourself that what you've heard is not true. I mean, Madame de Stael, I think, was one of the women I studied from French history. And she said this one quote. I'm going to look for it real quick. It is the voice of conscience is so delicate that it is easy to stifle it, but it is also so clear that it is impossible to mistake it. And I think that conscience is another, you know, for me, that's another way of saying like the intuition, the mm-hmm. intuitive knowingness, you know. But yeah, I think it's a, you know, it's a practice, I think, learning to really discern when it's your intuition and when it's some part of you that might be scared or freaking out a little bit. And then also making the leaps to follow it over and over again. It takes courage to do that, especially when it doesn't make logical sense. You know, we're such a logic oriented culture. Yeah. You know, things just really need to be linear in our thinking and make sense. And so the intuitive kind of gets shoved under the rug a lot in our culture when actually it's so essential.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because it brings to mind the path that we took to get to Santa Barbara. I mean, ordinarily, you, you know, from a linear standpoint, you would say that the path we took, I wouldn't have planned it that way. Mm-hmm. And certainly the plan was to lose your job and quit your job, and then to spend the next 2 months first traveling to Santa Barbara to see what we could see, then going back, putting your house on the market for sale. This was prior to, as a matter of fact, we were out of Phoenix 2 weeks before that market began to collapse, real estate market. Talking about being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
But who would have planned it that way?
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. As a matter of fact, I even looked back on it when I started to muse about it, thinking, you know, we didn't have to wait until we lost our jobs. You know, you know, we could have planned a little trip of 3 or 4 days, stayed with who we stayed with, and did a little reconnaissance and relaxation and recreation, then gone back, put the house on sale, you know, on the market, and so on and so on and so on. But it happened the way that it happened. Mm-hmm. And I even
well, that it's yeah okay go ahead
well I say and even even the aspect of what I came up with as because my wife came to me and said, you know, this was March 1st of 2006 and we were sitting watching TV. She came over, sat down, she says, I'm really scared, you know, I mean, you know, neither of us have jobs and, you know, no prospects and so on and so on. So what are we going to do? And of course, having been and done all of the things that I have over the years, read the books and interviewed the people and so forth, the one message that came to me was, well, what you do when you're on the edge of a precipice, as she called it, or a cliff, you do two things. First, you jump. And the second is you trust.
Yeah.
Now, that was easy then, and there was no fear. Mm-hmm. That's why it was easy, because there was no fear. But now you bring it into the present day and it's like, okay, so how do I keep this aspect alive? How do I get back into that non-fear or fearless state of jumping and trusting?
Mm-hmm.
That's to me the big one. It's like, I learned that lesson. Why can't I reincorporate it?
Yeah, I love this. So that's one, you know, there were so many insights I had into creating the story process. One of them was, as I said, you know, I actually got stuck in some quicksand when I was in the jungle after I'd been offered my dream job for a year-long contract. So I was elated and I had to come back and I was so distraught about it. I don't think I allowed myself to even really acknowledge just how hurt I was. It felt like I'd gotten kicked out of the jungle, like the Garden of Eden. And so years later, I remember I just never really felt as happy deep down as I had felt when I was there. You know, I felt so happy when I was there. And like you, so you had this experience in the past where you weren't afraid, you made this leap, everything went well. And sometimes those experiences, those positive experiences, like for me, being in the jungle was the happiest time of my life. I cried all the time from happiness, you know. But that experience wasn't fully integrated into the story of my life as a whole. And as long as that was the case, I wouldn't be able to draw on the power of that experience, even unconsciously. If the positive things that have happened to you are integrated in the right way in your story, they become like a snowball rolling down a hill that just gets bigger and bigger. They just keep growing. You can rely on those things continuing to repeat, because the story of our lives, you know, they repeat. You know, it's funny how people deny that they have them, but yet we have this cultural habit of being like, well, that's the story of my life. I'm always late. That's the story of my life. They always turn out to be jerks. Like, we're referring to them constantly, and yet we act like it's some cosmic joke that we've been written into that we have no power of. And like, we're not even aware of how true what we're saying is,
yeah.
And that we actually do have the power to change that story. And there's a number of things that you do in the method to make sure that it's balanced in such a way. But honestly, when you change it in writing in a way that is authentic, you can't help but experience your life changing right alongside of it, because you'll always keep attracting whatever's dominant.
Well, that's the story of my life. I'm always in the right place at the right time.
And that's what I was saying earlier. Like, I wanted to be like, well, it's not that surprising to me that you keep having all of these things work out and move fluidly, because that is the story that you're telling. Mm. And that is the story, you know, our stories are mental constructs. We carry them with us all the time. And that is your story. That's what you're repeating. That's what you're embodying. And as long as that is the case, you will continue to have things keep going well for you, because history repeats itself, you know? And so the problem is when that story is not working in your favor, that it's time for it to evolve.
Mm-hmm. You know? I think that's important. And of course, you know, I've shared with our listeners that, you know, I'm dealing with hypertension, high blood pressure. I'm taking my med and I go in and I have my blood pressure checked probably 3, 4, 5 times a week, just because, you know, I like to see where I'm at, even though I know that it fluctuates even throughout any given day. Mm-hmm. But I also have been stating that it's not biological. It's psychological. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just kind of know this. Mm-hmm. And that it is also, in spite of what my mother might tell me, and I love her dearly, that it's hereditary.
Yeah.
My feeling is it's just a phase, that maybe by the time I reach 60, if not sooner, I won't need the med anymore. My blood pressure will be just fine, because I might have actually found that psychological or even spiritual trigger to release whatever it is that's causing the ups and downs. Or, as I've even stated, how do you know that that isn't my normal pressure? All right, from the statistics, that seems a little in the normal range, but a little high. Mm-hmm. But how do you know that that isn't mine?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wouldn't you think that most type A people might have
higher,
a little higher blood pressure and so forth? But anyway, I think you're absolutely right that there is an aspect of evolution that really needs to go on with our stories. We need to continue to and grow from them. I think one of I'm always using the late Gene Roddenberry's analogies as far as Star Trek is concerned in describing a lot of some of the things that I experience. And before we wrap up the program, you know, I'm wanting to get your take on this as well. We were talking before about this aspect of intuition, and I have observed and thought a lot about one of the characters that has been a part of the last, I think, 3 or 4 series, starting with Star Trek Generation, through Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and apparently I don't know that it's in the Enterprise version, which is pre-Kirk. But there's a new series apparently that's going to be coming out next year. I don't know what the gist of that is, but nonetheless, the characters are the Borg. It's this group of individuals who are part of a collective. They get their information from a central source, and they're basically going around assimilating all of these different species. And believe it or not, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they don't assimilate all civilizations, because they don't deem as worthy to be assimilated, because they're inferior. There's nothing there for them to assimilate, really, because they're so primitive and so forth. So they leave them alone. But the point is the collective aspect. And I started looking at that in terms of our spiritual connection to the universe, the higher mind, God, etc. And again, listening to that still small voice inside. You have your purpose. I have my purpose. They're not the same, but they are congruent. And they help to paint, if you will, the big picture, whether we can see it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's just, you know, it's what I talk about in the story program all the time. You know, you can look at it in any number of ways. You can you can make a case for anything. I mean, you could make a case for our purposes actually being the same too in some ways, because we both actually are here to help raise vibrations,
yeah,
helping people see things in ways that change their lives. Like at root, we're both here to help uplift. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing that every day, and that's what I'm doing too. We're doing it in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's what's, I'm always trying to look at everything from as many angles as possible to see which ones feel best and to see which ones that, you know, my intuition really aligns with most.
And of course, that's going to change from moment to moment.
Yes, it will. That's absolutely why I've edited my story like hundreds of times. Each time is really fun because I always find something new. Yeah. I'm always stretching myself to change the perspective to a higher feeling one.
But doesn't there have to come a point in something like that where you say, okay, I'm going to stop now, because if I don't, it will never get published. No one will ever read this book or whatever it is you're producing.
That's definitely been, yes, yeah. I'm definitely in that place right now. I'm like, okay, this next round of edits with my editor, like it's out the door. I know I'm going to keep writing this, but you know, the book has elements of my own story in it for sure. But my personal ELS, my personal essential life story, which is a 5 to 10 page story, I revisit it for an update, like a rewrite, at least once every 3 months. But because I've done all of that, if I want to manifest something new that isn't in there and I'm feeling a little challenged in it, or if I'm having a certain challenge and I'm not sure why, if I go back to my story and read it with the intention of finding what's missing in the story or what needs to be altered into the story to help me achieve what I'm wanting to achieve next, I always find some breakthrough, some major aha, and I update it then. I don't keep rewriting it every day. But it's always there. And it, as long as my life is evolving, my story is going to evolve.
You can always publish first edition, second edition, yes, third edition, 75th edition. Yes. Or you could put out supplements, you know, to the book and say, okay, if you've purchased the book, well, the supplement is a couple of bucks, you know, here you go. Yeah. You know, and maybe even they could, the publisher could actually design the book to expand physically, you know, to add more pages or something like that.
You know, I want to publish other people's essential life stories because the stories my clients write with this process, they're awesome, you know, wow. And I learned so much from people about just life itself, my own life, them.
That's cool.
Really inspiring.
That's very cool. Before we wrap up the program, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with our listeners here on the program and for sharing your story with us, and invite you, should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
I used to live in Santa Barbara.
Really?
I went to the Santa Barbara City College.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Well, I transferred to Berkeley. I love it there.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to, like I say, have you in studio and talk more about all of this and expand upon it and see where it has evolved from this interview.
That would be great. I would love that. And I've thank you so much for having me on.
And also to remind our listeners, go to The Evolving. I've forgotten the third word. Oh my gosh.
The Evolving
Artist.
Yeah,
no, TheEvolvingArtist.com. That's the evolving. What's that?
Maybe I was just supposed to say it.
Oh, okay. I think maybe that's probably the case. In any event, check it out. We'd love for you to give her a touch base with her. And there's a place where you can contact her and she'll touch base with you and then help you to maybe get some insights and help you to move forward and what have you. And before we let you go, Terry, I want to ask you three more questions that I put to all of my guests. The first one is, who is Terry Wade?
That's a great question. Who is Terry Wade? In like one sentence?
You can be as vociferous or as sparse of that as you wish.
Yeah, Terry Wade is also an artist, you know, who wants to make a difference in the world.
Okay. And though you've probably addressed this numerous times throughout the program, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to help to, I want to be a part of the tilting of the scales on our planet from one of a lot of conflict to one where people sustainably live in harmony with one another.
And who inspires you?
Gosh, tons of people, but what inspires me the most are, it's going to make me cry, the Achuar, the people that I lived with in the Amazon who live in such a harmonious way with themselves and with all the creatures that surround them. And they are why I have faith that we can really turn things around on this planet.
Well, we can certainly use more folks like you and the work that you're doing. So we encourage our listeners to go to your website, theevolvingartist.com. And again, Terry Wade, thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing your book in print one day soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Richard.
You bet. I'm Richard Doong. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.